Monday, August 20th, 2012. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the suburbs of Chicago. Thanks for joining me today, and thanks for listening to RBN. For people who can distinguish the difference between the truth and disinformation and persuasive, allegedly scholarly, often passionate indoctrination. To see the guest lineup for Studios A and B, please click on the word schedule in the RBN banner at the top of the page at republicbroadcasting.org. Please visit the radio schedule page for this program at spingola.com to see a list of the guests together with links to their websites. For questions or comments only during the program, email spingola1 at yahoo.com. Otherwise, my regular email is deanna at spingola.com. Please hold your calls until we open the phone lines in the second hour at 800-313-9443. My guest today is Mike Campbell. He is the author of Amelia Earhart, The Truth at Last, published on June 21st, 2012, and he is the co-author with Thomas Devine of With Our Own Eyes, Eyewitnesses to the Final Days of Amelia Earhart, published in 2002. Mike is a member of the Amelia Earhart Society of Researchers. His website is EarhartTruth.com. He is an award-winning writer as an active duty Navy and Civilian Department of Defense journalist and public affairs officer. He retired from federal service in 2008. After meeting Thomas E. Devine, author of the 1987 classic Eyewitness, the Amelia Earhart Incident, in 1988, Campbell was convinced that Devine and others were correct when they proclaimed the presence and death of Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan on Saipan after their disappearance in July of 1937. After 14 years of collaboration with Devine, in 2002, a small Ohio company published their book, With Our Own Eyes, Eyewitness to the Final Days of Amelia Earhart. In 2005, Campbell edited the Acheson Report, an extensive debunking of the notorious and false ideas presented in the 1970 book, Amelia Earhart Lives. Mike Campbell lives in Knoxville, Tennessee. In his book, he states, and I quote, "Our government media complex continues its campaign to perpetuate the myth that Earhart and Noonan landed on the sea to the northwest of Howland Island on July 2, 1937. Unquote. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi, Deanna. Nice to be here.
Well, I'm so happy that you could join me.
Thank you so much for that nice introduction.
It's a privilege to have you on the program. You are, I love your book. I've been reading it literally night and day. I have a copy of it on my iPad. I take it to bed with me and read until I get very tired. And then in the morning when I get up, I have it on my downstairs computer and my upstairs computer. It's in front of me all the time.
Well, I appreciate that you've done, you know, your homework so well.
It's an amazing book. It is truly an amazing book. And
thank you. Well, the book represents basically 24 years of research. You know, there's so much in the book. There's no way that we're going to be able to cover any significant portions of it during the next few hours. But what I want your listeners to come away with, if there's anything that I want them to come away with, it's just one word from the next 2 hours, and that word, when associated with Amelia Earhart, is Saipan. Okay? You know, when we hear talk about what happened to Amelia Earhart.
I'm sorry, we have to go to a real quick break. So we'll leave with the word Saipan, and we'll be back, and we'll pick it up on the other side of the break.
Chlorine, fluoride, pathogens, and more are in the water you drink day to day. Do you want the ability to remove and reduce those harmful things in the water you drink? You can. How? With a Berkey water filter. A complete standalone gravity filter system that requires no electricity and no plumbing. Use for emergencies or for every day. Berkey systems come in 7 different sizes. Where can you get one? from GetBerkey.com. That's GetBerkey.com. With the purchase of each system, you get 50% off accessories, such as fluoride filters, water level spigot, and sport bottles. Plus, free shipping on all orders over $25. For a limited time, get 5% off all ceramic systems when you use coupon code RBN. Call GetBerkey at 855-GetBerkey. That's 855-438-2375. Or visit GetBerkey.com. That's GetBerkey.com.
In 2010, millions of people were awakened to the question of what? Now the next question that remains to be answered is, why in the world are they spraying? An investigative look into one of the many agendas associated with chemtrail geoengineering programs, weather control. Why in the world are they spraying? Premiering and streaming live August 18th at the three-day event, Consciousness Beyond Chemtrails Conference and Fundraiser in Los Angeles. For more info, go to www.cbclive2012.com. Why in the world are they spraying? Order your copy today at www.whyintheworldaretheyspraying.com. Watch the premiere live August 18th at the three-day event, Consciousness Beyond Chemtrails Conference and Fundraiser in Los Angeles. For more info, go to www.cbclive2012.com. Why in the world are they spraying?
And if you control the weather, you're going to control the planet. It's that simple.
In an emergency situation, would you drink contaminated water? You could if you had the amazing Life Straw from MyPatriotSupply.com. Life Straw is the most advanced personal water filter available today. It filters contaminated water from almost any source. Life Straw is lightweight and compact, perfect for hiking, camping, or in an emergency like a flood. Life Straw is easy to clean, comes with a one-year warranty, and has been used worldwide since 2005. Get the amazing Life Straw personal water filter at MyPatriotSupply.com. Plus, check out Survival Seed Vault, 20 seed varieties for only $37.95, Tattler canning lids, long-term storable foods as low as $69.95, and much more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Enjoy stress-free shipping on all orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927 or visit MyPatriotSupply.com. That's 866-229-0927, MyPatriotSupply.com. For emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence.
He is the author of Amelia Earhart, The Truth at Last. And I'm going to ask that you email your questions to spingola1@yahoo.com. I think we won't take calls. We'll just take the email questions because there is a lot of information to cover. Okay. Mike, continue. You were talking about Saipan, and that's what you wanted the listeners
to really remember. Thank you. Yes, but first I'd just like to thank you again for the opportunity to tell your listeners the truth about what happened to Earhart. You know, without government or media interference and all the propaganda and falsehoods that the American people have been subjected to for nearly 75 years and continue to be subjected to. You and our mutual friend Dave Martin, who's been on your show before, are among the scant few.
Isn't just about Earhart. It's about all the other lies that they've told us. And this is just an example, a stunning example, and with so many motives behind it. My goodness, what a story you've told.
Thank you. Yeah, you're right. I mean, there's just so much involved with this, and it's not, you know, as I was talking about Saipan, this is not a secret to anybody that really wants to find out the truth that about Earhart and Fred Noonan, her navigator. It's if you really want to find out what happened to them, all you have to do is look at Fred Gerner's first book, The Search for Amelia Earhart, in 1966. They were taken to Saipan. We'll get to Gerner's, bona fides later, but Gerner's book was the only bestseller that's ever been written on the Earhart matter in 1966, and he found that they were taken to Saipan and by the Japanese after landing in the Marshall Islands in 1937, July 2nd, and they died on Saipan. Gerner started the ball rolling with all this, but and then other people picked it up, and we'll talk about those people. But this book, Amelia Earhart, The Truth at Last, more than any other Earhart disappearance book, focuses completely on establishing the Marshall Islands and Saipan presence of Earhart and Noonan. Because of this fact, and President Roosevelt's possible, probable, even abandonment of Earhart and Noonan on Saipan, the truth in the Earhart case has become a sacred cow. The legacy
right.
of the
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, I know. There's so much to get out here. This is all about protecting FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the Democratic Party's icon. This is all about him. This is where it all goes back to. This is why we are constantly being bombarded with disinformation about what happened to Amelia Earhart.
Right, and it isn't just about FDR, because every single president since then has basically covered for him, except for JFK, who was quite a fan of Earhart and wanted to let her story out and began to proceed to do that.
That's right. We only have bits and pieces from Gerner's notes about how much Kennedy really wanted or was able to help him. Gerner never wrote about it, as far as I know, and he didn't talk about it either on his radio program. Gerner was a KCBS newsman in San Francisco in 1960 when he first found out about the account of Josephine Blanco to Dr. Schecht. This is where it all started. So, you know, contrary to what your listeners might believe or are used to hearing, the search for Amelia Earhart did not begin with Rick Gillespie and the TIGAR organization, the Organization for Historic Aircraft Recovery out of Wilmington, Delaware. These are the people. Last night, they might have seen the Discovery Channel special on the latest excursion to Nicomororo, the 10th such boondoggle by these people. TIGAR has sucked the air out of the truth in the Earhart case since their first trip to the island in 1989. This is an abject deception. It's a complete fraud. It keeps the average American completely stupid about the Earhart disappearance, thanks to our trusted government media establishment's devotion to misleading and misinforming the public, okay, about what happened. I don't want to waste too much more time on TIGAR and the media and all the nonsense that they put out. It's best that you, much better if we spend our time educating the listener about what really happened on Saipan.
Let me just make one comment about TIGAR. And in the reviews for your book, I believe there are five of them thus far, a Mr. Tom King, who apparently is a mouthpiece for TIGAR, gave you a three-star review. But he basically bashes your book and promotes TIGAR.
Uh-huh.
Enough said.
Yeah, uh-huh. I've been back and forth with Mr. King a few times, and you're absolutely right. Enough is said. Gillespie and Tom King were barely out of toilet training when Gerner started on his investigations in 1960 as a result of Paul Breen's book, Daughter of the Sky. That was published in 1960. And it was and at the end of the book, Brian began the book as a biography. There's been hundreds of biographies written about Amelia Earhart. There's so much information contained in those biographies about her achievements, her aviation achievements. Some people, Gillespie, one of them, don't think much of her as a pilot, but she was an amazing pilot. She had records, all kind of individual records, solo records that she had set during the 1930s. One of them being this her solo flight across the Atlantic Ocean, which is really well described in Mary Lovell's book. I'm trying to think of the name of it right now, but I can't. But Mary Lovell's book about Amelia is one of the better biographies. The Sound of Wings is the name of it. But getting back to the era, the dawning of the modern investigations into Earhart, it began in 1960. When Fred Gerner saw a newspaper report in the San Mateo Times, written by Linwood Day, reporting on what Josephine Blanco had told a Dr. Schecht, who was a dentist on Saipan in the 40s, about what she had seen. Briand got wind of this and published it at the end of his book about what Josephine had seen. And I think it's important, it's so important as a seminal witness contribution to the, you know, to what really instigated everything, is that then I should read this from Paul Briand's book. Is that okay, or do we...
Sure,
are we...
sure, go ahead.
Okay, here we are in... I'm quoting now Paul Briand from The End of Daughter of the Sky. This is what got it all started back then. In the summer of 1937, Josephine was riding her bicycle toward Tanapag Harbor. She was taking her Japanese brother-in-law, J.Y. Matsumoto, his lunch, and was hurrying along because it was nearly 12 o'clock. Josephine had a special pass to the Japanese military area near the harbor. Not even Japanese civilians were admitted to the area unless they carried the proper credentials. The young girl rode up to the gate, stopped her bicycle, and presented her pass. The guard allowed her into the restricted area. On the way to meet her brother-in-law, Josephine heard an airplane flying overhead. She looked up and saw a silver two-engine plane. The plane seemed to be in trouble, for it came down low, headed out into the harbor, and belly landed on the water. It was not until she met her brother-in-law that Josephine discovered who it was that had crash-landed in the harbor. The American woman, everyone was saying, greatly excited, come and see the American woman. Josephine and her brother-in-law joined a knot of people who gathered to watch. She saw the American woman standing next to a tall man wearing a short-sleeved sports shirt and was surprised because the woman was not dressed as a woman usually dressed. Instead of a dress, the American woman wore a man's shirt and trousers, and instead of long hair, she wore her hair cut short like a man. The faces of the woman and man were white and drawn as if they were sick. Briand added, okay, that's the last of the quote. Briand added that Josephine had identified a photo of Earhart and Noonan as absolutely being that of the same man and woman she saw on Saipan in 1937.
Okay. The official story is that that these two people actually crashed in the water and they sank to the bottom, and that's a government story, and that's the one that the provocateurs tell, and what you call the government media complex, and they're complicit together to promote this official version.
Exactly right. The Navy story is the same as the Coast Guard story, where they both filed separate reports in 1937, and they both found that they both agreed that she came down northwest of Howland Island, within 120 miles of the island, landed on the water, and disappeared. That story has absolutely nothing to support it. There wasn't even a shred of debris ever found. It started to wear so thin that by the late 1980s, nobody really accepted it anymore, which necessitated a new idea. And that's where the Tigar idea and the idea that they might have landed on Nicomararo, which is about 300 miles or 350 miles southeast of Howland, that they might have landed there based on a funny interpretation of where radio signals crossed. And there were so many different reported messages post-loss after July 2nd from allegedly from her, never proven to be from her. Anyway.
Right. Now, we are coming up on a break, but the U.S. government did send out search parties for her. For them, and they were unsuccessful. But we do have to go to a 3-minute break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors.
The freeze-dry guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standards for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dry guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The Freeze Dry Guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes six number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every Meat Eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our one-year-plus Meat Eater's units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the Freeze Dry Guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
As many of you know, natural supplements are fantastic for your body and have zero side effects. You need to restore your body's natural balance. Theravim strives to carry only the highest quality dietary supplements and natural vitamins that can be beneficial in helping your body recover from the impact of daily stress, allergens, illness, environmental pollution, and the aging process. Why buy from Theravim? Simple. Theravim provides a rewards program. Earn $1 for every $10 spent, free health consultations, free shipping on all orders, and an additional 10% discount on every order when you mention the coupon code RBN. Call 866-647-4372. That's 866-647-4372, or go to Theravim.com. That's TheraVim.com. Theravim, the best supplements on earth.
Warning for all Gulf Coast disaster survivors. Be aware that dangerous gases are in the air you breathe. Benzene, hydrogen sulfide, methylene chloride, and Corexit 9500. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. For all Gulf Coast residents and all who want to be healthy, hempusa.org brings you a new formulation of microplant powder with lactobacillus acidophilus, rebuilding your immune system while detoxing the rest of your body, pulling out positive toxins, heavy metals, viruses, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Microplant powder will help eliminate these dangerous chemicals from the body used in the Gulf cleanup. At hempusa.org, we want you to try our number one selling detox product, microplant powder. Call and order at 1-908-691-2608. 1-908-691-2608. Or visit us at hempusa.org today.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. My guest today is Mike Campbell, the author of Amelia Earhart, The Truth at Last, published on June 21st, 2012. His website is EarhartTruth.com. Dave Martin, our mutual friend, compares Roosevelt's probable abandonment of Earhart and Noonan on Saipan to the government's abandonment of the POWs in Southeast Asia. Now, there's a motive behind the government's behavior and actions, and so I know you'll get to that.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we left off with Paul Brian's account from Josephine Blanco, which she was the best-known eyewitness at that time on Saipan. And Fred Gerner was a very well-known radio newsman in San Francisco. He read that account, not only Brian's account, but newspaper stories about it, in 1960 in late May, and contacted her immediately. He was fascinated. He visited her and her husband in San Mateo, and then he flew to Saipan shortly after that. On Saipan, Gerner interviewed approximately 200 Native people about their knowledge of what happened in July of 1937. He found what he called his original 13 witnesses, who strongly corroborated what she had seen at Tanapag Harbor. Now, there's two things, at least two things here that have to be remembered when we talk about witnesses on Saipan. First of all, the Japanese were not pleased that anyone would talk about this, and they didn't want anybody to know about the arrival of Amelia Earhart on Saipan. So there weren't that many witnesses to begin with. Secondly, in the years following the war, the people on the natives of Saipan retained the memories of the Japanese cruelty to the natives on Saipan since they had taken over the island following the mandated, you know, when they took over, when Saipan was mandated by the UN to be a Japanese possession. And so people were afraid to talk. Still, Gerner found 13 witnesses on Saipan. One of them was a doctor, a dentist, in fact. His name was Manuel Aldan, A-L-D-A-N. He was a dentist, and he understood Japanese. He told Gerner in 1960 that he didn't see the white woman or man, but offered an important detail that he overheard from a Japanese officer. Aldan told Gerner, "I dealt with high officials on the island, and they knew what they were saying, and knew what they were saying in Japanese. The name of the lady I here used, this is the name the Japanese officer said, Earhart." Aldan said he heard much about Earhart from his patients, and in 1937, these were restricted to Japanese officers. So, I mean, who else could it have been?
Sure. Exactly. You
know, and this so, is one of, go ahead.
They had been, as you indicate in your book, they had been militarizing the those islands, Marshall Islands, for some time, and since at least the early 30s. And so this was kind of interesting that that Earhart and Noonan would land there, and that both the Japanese and the U.S. government would want to keep this covered up.
Yep.
Particularly after the war, when they kind of cemented their relationship.
Yes, yes. This is the Japanese were building up the Marshalls, you know, especially certain islands in the Marshalls and Saipan as well. All these were part of the mandates. This was their territory, and they considered it taboo for Westerners to enter that territory. As the years got more and more closer to the 1940 and their wartime plans, they were very protective of the islands. And we have there's so much that has been found later on about that and their attitude. So this plays into how they treated her when they found her, and the possibility that she was sent to the Marshall Islands to get lost there on purpose. We don't know that for sure. Okay, we don't have absolute proof that she did land in the Marshalls as a result of being directed to do so, so that the United States Navy could come in and see what was going on. This is just an idea that's possible. What's really important is not how she got to the Marshall Islands. Actually, Millie Atoll in the Marshalls, Barry Island is where most of the witnesses point to. We do have that, and we get to that. You know, to the witnesses that saw her there and what they said, but we don't know for sure why. I mean, or how she got to the Marshalls, whether it was because they were lost to the point where Fred Noonan started to look for a place to land, and they went north where they knew that there was a radio station in Jalawit, a Japanese radio station that he honed in on. That was Almond Gray's idea. That's why that they landed there, not that they were directed there. So this is, it's what's important is what happened after they landed, you know.
Okay.
The rest of it is just so inscrutable. It's so hard to pick apart and to absolutely say why, you know. The thing about her being a spy, is such a red herring, you know. It gets in the way of really what's important.
Right. All righty. We do have a 3-minute break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Don't answer it! How can I stop these annoying collection calls?
Imagine being free from your debt without settling and with no payment plan, no negotiating or filing bankruptcy, and no attorneys. What if you could eliminate the risk from all your unsecured debt in about 90 days and keep all your money? You can. It's called Zero Debt Guarantee, and it works. There's no other program of its kind on the planet, and we guarantee the results in writing. Call now, 800-477-9256. Let our team of experts provide you with the resources to fight back, stop collection calls, and prevent and stop wage garnishments and bank levies. If you're facing foreclosure, we can help. Don't go it alone. Get free information now by calling 800-477-9256. Talk to an expert who has also completed our program. Call 800-477-9256 for free info or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com. That's 800-477-9256 or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com.
If you would like to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself from anything out of bounds concerning cardiovascular or diabetic circulation problems, then this might be the most important ad you'll ever hear. It is possible to acquire a 100% organic nutritional supplement for a healthy heart and circulation, which works. It is extremely effective and starts to work within days. For a long and healthy life, order today by calling 866-295-5305. 866-295-5305. A healthy heart is a happy heart. Order online at heartandbody.com. That's heartandbody.com.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! Huh. For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
It's Mike Campbell, the author of Amelia Earhart, The Truth at Last. His website is, EarhartTruth.com. Sorry about that. Dave Martin just emailed and he said, and I quote, "Isn't there almost a complete parallel between the Earhart case and the TWA 800 case? Many, many eyewitnesses saw a missile streaking up toward TWA 800, but they were all ignored. Many, many witnesses saw Amelia Earhart and her airplane in the custody of the Japanese, but they all continued to be ignored. Government experts trump honest citizens who have no axe to grind," unquote.
Thank you, Dave. Absolutely correct. As usual, where we left off before the break, we were talking about some of his witnesses, some of Fred Gerner's original 13 witnesses on Saipan. We talked about Dr. Manuel Aldana Dentist, who actually was actually heard Japanese officers identify their prisoner as Earharto, which could only have been Amelia Earhart. Other witnesses that Gerner interviewed, Gregorio Camacho was a farmer from Saipan. He told Gerner he saw the white people at Tanapag Harbor and later at Garapan. The Japanese told him they were flyers and were surprised to see a lady flyer because at that time it would never happen that a lady would fly. Another guy named Jesus Boyer, B-O-Y-E-R, noted another. He was another farmer from Saipan. Said he was working at Tanapag Harbor when he saw the white people. I remember well the white lady, Boyer told Gurner. Her face, arms, posture all looked American, but the Japanese kept them. They were very suspicious. Boyer couldn't remember the color of the lady's hair, except that it was cut short, as Amelia Earhart's hair was known to be, and recalled that this episode was kept very secret because at that time, under Japanese rule, it was very unsafe to disclose information.
Okay. And she was a heroine in America. People
Absolutely.
Really loved her.
She was one of the most famous people in the world. I mean, there's just no getting around that. I think, though, if Babe Ruth was murdered at the hands of the Japanese in 1937, I don't think they would have been able to keep that quiet. For
right.
Something tells me they wouldn't. But for some reason, this has been able, the disinformation program has been so extensive and so concentrated since the late 80s, when it really kicked into full speed, people are just not, most people under 50 have never even heard of Amelia Earhart. And if they have, it's because of what they see on TV, Deanna.
Right.
So the education of the educational aspects of this are just pathetic, the way, you know, people... Most people are not aware of her. Secondly, they're not curious, and thirdly, they're being force-fed disinformation
right.
about her. So to break through this is, you're talking about Mission Impossible here almost.
But you've done
we're
it.
We're trying.
You've done it.
Well, I published a book, you know, after hundreds of rejections, and I mean that's a story in itself. Just to find a publisher that would actually step up and publish this book was daunting.
Which tells you something else about the publishing industry.
Yes, it does. They're much like the media establishment.
Right.
Yeah.
Controlled.
So Sunbury Press and Larry Knorr, the publisher, you know, was good enough to stick his neck out a bit, I guess, you know, and do this. Getting back to some of Gurner's witnesses, I know your listeners would be interested to hear some of this stuff, because this information is just lost. It's lost in history, Deanna. Even though Fred Gurner sold 400,000 books in 1966, most of the people that were interested in the subject at that time are either gone or they're in their dotage. They're just too old to care anymore.
Well, when you think about the things that happened in that particular decade, all the stuff that happened and the things that happened afterwards, our entire culture has changed, and people are distracted by entertainment and by a lot of garbage, and people aren't questioning their history. And that is the thing that we have to do, is question our history, because it has been totally corrupted and altered. And if we don't understand the situation with Amelia Earhart and so many other incidences, we're not going to understand what is going on now. So I applaud you for doing this work and for doing the research and for having the courage to publish the book. But I also understand that you're frustrated that people aren't accepting it, receiving it, because it is so important. You've put so much into it. And I assume that it's kind of disappointing that it isn't running out of the doors of the book sellers.
Well said, Deanna, well said. Yes, you know, this is it's very tough, you know, to put so much into it. I knew what I was signing on for when I got involved with this. I knew that the media would hate this message from the start. But I didn't understand just how much in lockstep the media, it doesn't seem to matter whether it's left media, right media, center media, alternative media, mainstream media, all of the media is just against this message getting out.
Right, you know, because people will start asking questions about other things. If they lied about Amelia Earhart, well, what else have they lied about? Well, just about everything.
Yeah, right. So, you know, that's why, you know, it's tough. So, you know, that's why I appreciate so much you stepping up and lending a hand, you know, on this.
Happy to do that.
Pedro Sasakeg is another guy in a native-born Saipan, Saipanese native, who told Gurner that he was the youngest of those working at the harbor for an unloading of food from the ships in 1937. We're talking about another witness now from Fred Gurner's first trip to Saipan in 1960. During that time, one of our group, said Sasakeg, went to the restroom and the place where they kept the lady and saw her face peering out a small window. The man told Sasakeg the woman was an American, and Sasakeg later saw her, describing her hair as light brown and cut like a man's. When asked if he knew what happened to her, Sasakeg replied, "I can't give you further answer because I just came to that place of work and I wasn't supposed to know the secret things." This is a typical account that you'll hear from the Chamorros on Saipan during that time period.
These people weren't looking for publicity or trying to be a hero. These people were reluctant to talk about this, and yet they did.
Absolutely right. In fact, the Saipanese natives were known to be insular types, very quiet, withdrawn types, not looking at all for the limelight, not seeking attention whatsoever. These are very low key people, and they were content to live. They were just happy to live in peace after what they had been subjected to during, the war on Saipan.
I mean,
so many of them died during the invasion. I mean, the invasion of Saipan in June 1944 was the biggest battle that had yet taken place in the Pacific. You know, 30,000 Japanese were killed there. The whole garrison on Saipan was wiped out during that invasion. And many of the locals also, of course, were killed. And, Saipan was a huge stepping stone to Japan in the war in the Pacific. And, it was just a place of complete terror in June
right.
of 1944, when we invaded there. So, that's a good place to, I think, to move on to talk about Thomas Devine.
Okay. Go ahead.
Because he was a sergeant. He was in the 244th Army Postal Unit on Saipan. He was not among the first wave of soldiers that attacked the island. Most of those people were second and fourth division Marines. Devine was in the Army, but he came ashore on July 6th. We were finally able to determine that that's when he came ashore on Saipan. And Devine said that the first day that he was there, he was directed by his lieutenant, Fritz Liebig, to take him to the Aslito Air Field, which was named by the Japanese, of course, and it was later renamed by the Americans Crosley Field, I believe. But he took his lieutenant to the airfield on some business. At the airfield, they were stopped, and they were directed to the front of an administration building to do their business. But things got very confused quickly. He was told, Devine was, by a Marine, that Amelia Earhart's airplane had just been discovered in a hangar adjacent to the airfield, which was in sight of Devine. And this was very interesting to Devine. Soon after that, a man who was dressed in Navy khaki, according to Devine, and who Devine later said that he identified as James Forrestal, came forward and ordered Devine and Liebig off the airfield, telling everyone else. There was a group of other Marines that were gathered there at the time as well. He ordered everyone away from the airfield, telling everybody it was off limits.
Now, was this actually Forrestal, or was it someone that simply looked like him or resembled him?
This is a real point of contention, and it really was a point of a problem for Devine and myself, because Devine really took me under his wing and trusted me with all of the new information that he got after the publication of his book, Eyewitness the Amelia Earhart Incident, in 1987. Devine, at the end of that book, asked for other GIs to come forward. Two dozen of them did so and gave him incredible accounts of what they knew about her plane and her being on the island. Devine was certain that Forrestal was on Saipan. However, Ear Heart researcher named Ron Bright and myself did an extensive investigation in 2002. We looked into everything we could possibly find, and there's just no way we can get Forrestal to Saipan in June of 1944.
Okay.
We do have someone else that looks a bit like Forrestal, whose photo I was not able to put in the book because I could not get permission to run the photo from the nephew who came forward with a story identifying his uncle as a man named James H. Nichols, who he said was an intelligence officer who was sent to Saipan to take care of the Earhart matter, to get rid of the airplane and any evidence that she was there.
Wow. And he was sent by the government, of course, or by Roosevelt.
Yes, yes. And, of course, Forrestal was in the chain of command that would have known about this. I don't think it was Forrestal on Saipan, though Devine would never budge from his conviction that it was. He was very intransigent about certain of his ideas, but he was an eyewitness to the airplane. He saw the Electra on Saipan three different times in one day. The last time he saw it, it was in flames at night and destroyed by fire, as much as fire can destroy an aluminum airplane. It certainly made it unrecognizable. All of this is in Devine's 1987 book. Now, that book was pretty much squelched as well by the media. Of course, this is pre-internet days, and the word was slow to get out about his book. But
right.
Somehow it did, and he was on Unsolved Mysteries in 1990. Devine.
But the point is that the government directed, whether it was Forrestal or somebody else, this individual directed the destruction of Earhart's Electra, the name of her airplane. And so why did the government want that airplane destroyed?
Well, so that there would be no evidence that she was ever there. FDR, once again, we don't know whether he actually abandoned her, whether he actually knew she was on Saipan in 1937, captured by the Japanese, taken there from the Marshals, or whether he found out in 1944, June 15. That's the latest that he could have found out that she was on Saipan and she was held by the Japanese. I mean, that's the absolute latest, was 1944, because we discovered her plane there. He didn't want that to be known. Even if he didn't abandon her, and even if he was innocent of that, he couldn't stomach the questions that would have come from the American public about Amelia Earhart's death on Saipan. That would have distracted everything away from the election, and he probably would have lost the upcoming election in 1944.
Right. I guess personalities do play a big part in elections, and winning popularity for politicians. And I think we saw this recently in the supposed killing of Osama bin Laden. That was a feather in Obama's cap. And it's just amazing how politicians use these things, use people, exploit people, and without any compassion or care about the people that they are using. So there were other reasons why. Because can you connect this to Pearl Harbor? Her being there, and the fact that our government basically had decodified, had broken the codes of the Japanese communications as early as, what, 1937?
Well, I'm not an expert on the code breaking. We have Robert Stinnett, whose 2003 book, I believe was 2003, Day of Deceit, The Truth About FDR and Pearl Harbor. This book was very controversial and makes the claim that we had broken the Japanese codes by 1941 or 1940, and that we knew that they were coming, that FDR knew that they were coming to Pearl Harbor, and he actually, his actions previous to that were meant to elicit the Japanese attention to Pearl Harbor and to draw them into Pearl Harbor and so that we could get into the war. This is Stinnett's claim. I'm not smart enough about code breaking and cryptology to be able to analyze that claim, Deanna. Other people tell me that it wasn't proven. It's never been proven that we had that capability at that time. However,
but if we did, they would have backtracked and would have known that she was on Saipan, and that is why they probably wanted the destruction of her airplane.
Absolutely, yeah, that's right. We can.
All righty, we do need to take a 3-minute break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Are you struggling to reclaim your health? Let me share my story quick. My nightmare of chronic fatigue, PTSD, and autoimmune issues cost me everything. A bankruptcy, loss of home, even my wife walked out on me with no hope in sight. A miracle happened after hitting my lowest point. I discovered ION and RNA drops. It literally saved my life. I want to share my story with you and offer you a trial size mini bottle of RNA drops. Visit www.rnafreemini.com. Again, that's www.rnafreemini.com. It's time to take your power back now. You can also look for our free trial offer ad at republicbroadcasting.org, RNA drops.
How would you like to own land? A refuge to escape from big cities, possible food shortages, the collapse of the dollar, or just a vacation trip is now available to you. Lots of fishing and hunting are available just across the Rio Grande River. Own your personal Colorado Wilderness RV lot within 3 stones' throw of the Rio Grande River for $1,395. Quarter-acre lots, county road access. All lots come with warranty deed. All just for $1,395. Call 785-672-3141. 785-672-3141. Or go online to ColoradoRiverLots.com for more information and to see photos. It is away from civilization, a good business investment, and a low-cost protection plan. Call today, 785-672-3141.
Hey there, my name is Frank Bates, but I'm about to tell you in the next 60 seconds could get me in a lot of trouble. I just created a free video presentation at 123crooks.com that exposes the electricity monopolies and government agencies for what they really are, incompetent, lying crooks that are counting on your ignorance and fear to keep your power bills criminally high. Some have called this a conspiracy. Others have called it a cover-up, and you'll be shocked to find out how deep the conspiracy goes. My video at 123crooks.com exposes the truth and shows you the secret of how I beat them and how you can beat them too. Watch the controversial video that thousands of other smart patriots have already seen in the last 3 months. Go to 123crooks.com and discover one weird trick to slash your power bill and protect your home. Go watch my video now at 123crooks.com before they force me to shut it down. 123crooks.com.
Welcome back. I am Deanna. My guest today is Mike Campbell, the author of Amelia Earhart, The Truth at Last. It was published on June 21st, 2012. His website is EarhartTruth.com, EarhartTruth.com. All righty, you were talking about Divine, Thomas E. Divine, who was a military guy and who wrote a book in 1987, Eyewitness, the Amelia Earhart incident,
right.
And at the end of his book, he asked for other veterans to come forward and tell what they knew about the situation.
Okay, okay. I was going to go to some more of these other side Penny's witnesses, but we can do that later. We can go to the witnesses that came forward with Divine. Let me get to my notes.
Go ahead and do however you'd like.
Yeah, that's fine. Well, I just wanted to say this one thing about what Gerner in the San Mateo Times announced in 1960. And then we'll go to Divine's witnesses. But this is important because I have a copy of this newspaper, which is just an amazing thing, Deanna. I have a copy of the San Mateo Times from July 1, 1960. And this is what I call the Earhart frenzy, reaching its crescendo in 1960 after Gerner had been over there on Saipan and turned in his results of his interviews. That newspaper had the huge headlines, 100-point headlines, and it said the mystery of Amelia Earhart is solved. Amelia Earhart mystery is solved. This was in 1960. Okay, and then just a little bit from the story. The mystery of the fate of Amelia Earhart was solved today, 23 years to the day that she vanished with her navigator over the lonely Pacific. Amelia Earhart and her navigator, Fred Noonan, crash-landed in the Garapan Harbor near the Tanapag Naval Base on Saipan in 1937. A Japanese naval launch picked up the two flyers and brought them to shore. They were taken to the military headquarters, questioned, and separated. Noonan was forced into an automobile by his captors and was never seen again. Amelia was moved to a small building at the military barracks compound. Okay, so this headline and this story in 1960 from the San Mateo Times essentially got the Earhart story right. Okay, and since then, it's almost as if the establishment has been trying to undo the truth, has been trying to undo that.
I'm sure they have.
This is an establishment newspaper that we're seeing, and they actually are portraying and depicting the truth about what happened with Earhart. And ever since then, you just won't find that. You can't find that anywhere. It's impossible. You'll never find them to tell the truth about what happened. So I like that. I really treasure my copy of that newspaper headline. It's something. It really is. Because that
and even though it's an establishment newspaper, I mean, even those kinds of newspapers have to tell the truth once in a while.
the thing is, in 1960, the word had not been put out yet. At all by the powers that be to the establishment media about what to do about the Earhart case. Gerner caught everyone by surprise with his investigations.
All righty. We do have to take a 60-second top-of-the-hour break. We will be right back after station ID.
Are you again?